How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello there, everyone. We're locked in for episode 117 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Head on to iTunes and search Locked On Thunder to subscribe to the podcast there. Leave a review once you're on that page also. And find us on audioboom.com too. And log on to normantranscript.com to check out my blog, Thunder Road, under the sports tab on the site. And you can find all my Thunder coverage there. Back to the normal schedule today. So every day of the week, Monday through Friday after today. This is obviously the Thursday show following the Hornets beating the Thunder 123-112 in Charlotte. Second night of a back-to-back on Thursday night. The Thunder play in Houston. So that's obviously a really tough second night of a back-to-back. Kind of messed up on the last show, to be honest. So I didn't have a podcast yesterday. I didn't have a podcast on a day last week as well. Didn't have a podcast on Monday. It was a little bit convoluted scheduling with the holiday. I had some technical issues on Sunday recording Monday schedule. So it was a little bit of a messed up. And anyway, I just totally messed up on the last podcast. When I titled it to put it on Audio Boom and iTunes and all that stuff, I titled it December 3rd, 2016 instead of January 3rd, 2017. I opened up the show by saying episode 115. It was episode 116. It was all awful. This time, I'll try to do a little bit better. So far, I'm doing okay, aside from the fact that I'm just hating on my own podcast. But, you know, it's the era of the hater. 2017 is going to be the year of the hater. You guys should probably already know that. The Hornets stung the Thunder on Friday night. I already messed up. It was Wednesday night. Oh! So close. They beat the Thunder on Wednesday night, 123-112. Russell Westbrook, 33 points, 15 boards, 8 assists, 10 of 31 shooting. He was a real off-shooting night. Second straight game that was an off-shooting night. He's now 19 of 59 from the field over the last, 19 of 59 from the field. There we go. Over the last two games, he was 9 of 28 in that previous game against Milwaukee on Monday night. Steven Adams at 18 and 12, two straight strong offensive performances from him. Oladipo 18 and 5, but he was only 7 of 20 from the field. Enes Kanter, really strong scoring game, really strong overall game, honestly, over the bench by Kanter standards. 22 points, 22 points in only 19 minutes coming off the bench. But the first thing I want to talk about, I gotta talk about the tech. The Russell Westbrook tech. If you watch the game, you know exactly what I'm talking about right now. We're going to start off with the tech and some talk about the game, and then I will have some Houston talk, some Harden talk after that, since the Thunder do play on the second night of a back-to-back Thursday night. And that's obviously a huge game because Russell Westbrook versus James Harden. And what's kind of tuning up, somebody on Twitter told me, I wish I remembered who it was who told me this, because I'm not going to give them credit right now. Someone on Twitter compared what Russ and what Harden are doing right now to Maguire, Sosa in 98, and I kind of liked it. It's been a great MVP race. It's been an awesome MVP race, and the fact that we have more than half a season left of it is really fun, and the head-to-heads, the final two head-to-heads are going to be awesome. Anyway, first thing we got to talk about the Russell Westbrook technical. In case you didn't see the game, Russell Westbrook had two technicals rescinded earlier in the day. One was from a Detroit game from the middle of November. Another one was from the Phoenix game in the middle of December. And so he's down to 9 on the season, but he went up to 10 very quickly. In the first half of that game on Wednesday night in Charlotte, there was a timeout called. He kind of tossed the ball to the official. It was Trey Maddox from across the court, you know, maybe 25 feet away or something like that. He wound up and kind of threw it, and Maddox was walking down the baseline, and it hit Maddox right in the head. Brent Bernanke. I always want to say Ben Bernanke whenever I say his name, every single time. Brent Bernanke, the other official, came over, called technical foul because Russell Westbrook hit Trey Maddox in the head with that pass. It looked to be pretty unintentional. Like, Russell Westbrook, he had been a little frustrated with some no calls at the time. But there was no way Russell Westbrook was winding up and throwing a ball at an official. And if he was, then his aim was phenomenal because Trey Maddox was walking and he led him and just nailed him in the head. Westbrook's reaction in time showed the exact way that somebody would react if they threw a ball at somebody and they didn't, and they thought they were looking and they weren't looking, and it hit him in the head. His comments after the game vehemently said, "I did not throw it at an official. I would never throw it at an official. I would never do that. I would never disrespect the game like that," was his language. And Billy Donovan said there was no way he did it intentionally. And I absolutely do not believe that he did it intentionally. My prediction, actually, is I think that tech brought him up to 10 on the season. And I talked about how those two techs were rescinded earlier. I think this is going to be a rescinded technical foul. I think the league is going to bring this back just because I'm not 100% sure how you can justify one technical foul in this scenario. I think the league either has to assess another technical foul after the fact, or they have to rescind this tech. And the reason why I say that is because if you wind up and you purposefully throw a ball at a referee and peg a referee, no matter what the reason is, if you did that intentionally, that's not a technical foul. That is two techs. That is an ejection. That is a suspension. That is a massive fine. You're gone for games, and you should be. And Russell Westbrook obviously did not do that intentionally, and I don't think anybody really believes that he did it intentionally. How can you watch that video and say that he did that intentionally? I don't think any player in the league would throw a ball at an official, because the consequences would be insane. They would get destroyed by penalties from the league. And if you think that a guy threw it at him intentionally, then the penalties would be insane. That's an ejection on the spot. It's a massive suspension. It's a massive fine. And it absolutely should be that. Of course it should. I don't think anybody's going to argue that it shouldn't be that. But if you don't think that he did it intentionally, it's not a technical foul. It's a misunderstanding. It's a mistake. It's unfortunate. He hit him in the head. There were no injuries. No one was hurt. But it's a mistake. It's not worth the tech. So there's not a scenario in which you can really only get one tech. Because if it's intentional, the punishment is so much more severe than one tech. So my guess is that it ends up getting rescinded. I want to stress that that's a guess. I know because I'm a reporter, sometimes it's easy to misunderstand whether I'm reporting or whether I'm just making an educated guess based on my knowledge of the league. This is the latter. This is simply an educated guess. My educated guess is that tech is going to be rescinded at some point. I don't know if it'll be tomorrow or the next day or way down the line, but at some point this technical foul will be rescinded is my guess, and Russell Westbrook's going to end up going back down a technical foul. He's at 10 right now. After that tech, he's at 10 on the season, which puts him 6 away from, you know, getting the automatic league suspension. But at least that's my analysis of the whole situation. Before we move on to more talk about the game, talk about Houston, I just want to tell you guys about BetDSI.com. And BetDSI.com has a great NBA special. You can sign up today and get $10 free to try their service. BetDSI is also offering a 100% bonus on your first deposit. It's great customer service. It's fast and easy payment of winnings. Hundreds of football and basketball wagers to choose from. You can also get UFC. You can get other sports. And BetDSI even has live in-game wagering on all football, basketball, and other major sporting events. You can play virtually everything at BetDSI. Go to BetDSI.com now. That's BetDSI.com. Go there now and use promotion code THUNDER10. That's one word, THUNDER, the number one, the number zero. Get your free wager and start winning today.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily Oklahoma City Thunder podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Some Twitter questions before we go. A 2-1 in here. The first one is from Douglas Kirk Lane. The Thunder offensive execution almost always disappears down the stretch. How can Donovan get through to Westbrook to trust late? And a similar question from friend of the show, James Hollis, who has been a guest on this podcast. How can Donovan better mold what Russ does with Oladipo, Adams, Abrines, Kanter can do? How can he get Russ to, quote, loosen the reins? So Westbrook, the last couple of games, has kind of gone into bad shot, Russ. A lot of pull-ups, a lot of threes. What was he from three tonight? 2 of 12 from three, 10 of 31 from the field. He got to the line a decent amount, 11 of 13 from the line, but this was not one of his better nights. Last game was not one of his better nights. And it's okay. Look, dude's allowed to have a couple of off nights. But the decision-making the last couple of nights has been off on the offensive end, I thought. third quarter against Milwaukee was definitely his worst stretch of basketball that he's played over the last eight quarters. That was like all pull-ups, really stagnant ball movement, kind of stagnated player movement because of that lack of ball movement during that period. That was bad basketball. Look, first off, I think you got to say he did a lot of other things well tonight. Rebounded well. He did make some really good passes. He got out in transition. He was energetic. He was emotional. He was emotional tonight. He always plays with emotion and passion. I mean, that's one of the things that so many people who are huge Russell Westbrook fans love about Russell Westbrook, and I get that. He plays with tons of emotion. He was a different kind of emotional. At one point, he had to go into the tunnel just to kind of blow off steam, and Mo Cheeks followed him in there, and they came back out together, you know, moments later. But he played with a lot of emotion during that game in Charlotte. I don't know if that's a good thing or bad thing. I don't think you can make a blanket statement that that's a good thing or a bad thing about a player. I think it depends on the certain guy. And I'm honestly not sure with Russ what it is. He plays with such emotion that maybe sometimes it's a good thing, sometimes it's a bad thing. I don't think I can necessarily say. And again, I was not in Charlotte tonight. I'm on a plane tomorrow morning. I'm on a 10:50 a.m. plane tomorrow morning to Houston. And I'm going to that game in Houston before I come back. I'm going to most of these games in this upcoming road trip. The only one I'm missing is Minnesota. But I'm going to Houston. I'm going to Chicago. And after that, I'm on that really long one. I'm on Sacramento, L.A. What is it? Sacramento, L.A., Golden State, Utah, New Orleans, Cleveland, San Antonio. I'm in all of those on that really long stretch. But I was not there, and it's harder to tell when you're not there. It's always just harder to tell through the TV, you know? But he definitely didn't play a good game, by his standards at least. I asked for what Billy Donovan can do. I think one of Billy Donovan's best traits in these 2 years. Look, I think Billy Donovan's done a good job in his year and a half as Thunder coach. And I think he's improved as a coach in terms of his X's and O's, in terms of his in-game decision-making, in terms of his in-game adjustments, in terms of just kind of the real basic stuff, just calling good timeouts and you know, making good, you know, end-of-quarter subs, going offense, defense at the right times, that kind of stuff, just the real basic stuff, which he didn't do as often during his first, I don't know, 4 months as Thunder coach. And that's fine. I mean, look, he was a rookie, you know, and he had to adjust, and that's what rookies do. I don't think we give coaches enough credit for improving, because coaches, like players, can improve too. But I think one of the best things that Billy Donovan has done is I think he's honed in some of Russell Westbrook's reckless traits, not all the way, but a tad, and he's honed in some of those traits, or at least Russell Westbrook has honed in some of those traits since Billy Donovan came over to coach the Thunder. And he's done that while still maintaining all the recklessness that makes him the tremendous player that he is. Because the interesting thing about Russell Westbrook, the thing that we all find so fascinating about him, is that the traits that lead to his negatives are the same ones that lead to his positives. So how do you hone that without getting rid of the absolutely amazing stuff that he does that maybe nobody else in the league can do? You know, the recklessness is what leads him to missing 21 shots in a game. It's also what leads him to those 45, 15, and 12 lines. I honestly don't know what he can do in terms of handling Russell Westbrook from a personality standpoint and having him mesh with Oladipo, Adams, Abrines, that kind of stuff, Kanter. I think he has done a little bit of a better job the last two games getting the ball to Adams at least early in the game. Steven Adams has started two straight games, 8-for-8 right now. Steven Adams needs to get the ball a decent amount. I thought they did a good job getting Adams the ball today. I thought late in the game against Milwaukee, they did not do a great job against that, but Milwaukee's good at cutting off passing lanes, and that was something they did well against the Thunder. But getting Adams the ball consistently is something that should happen on pick and rolls, on plays off screens, that kind of stuff. I think they need to find actions to get Adams the ball. But if Russell Westbrook is going to take those pull-ups, I don't know. When you ask Billy Donovan about those pull-ups, he doesn't seem to have much of a problem with them, at least publicly. He talks about them as shots that Russell Westbrook can make. He talks about them as that. Now, the one time I can think about that he was dissatisfied openly with Russell's shot selection was the first Phoenix game when he took 44 shots. Now, Billy defended the total number of... He defended the shots that he took in that game. He talked about how you have to give take what the defense gives you, and how Russell Westbrook's a really good pull-up mid-range shooter, and Phoenix was dropping back in the pick and roll with Tyson Chandler, and they were open shots, and that's all true, but Russell Westbrook was 4-for-16 from mid-range in that game. 16 mid-range shots in a game. That's crazy. That's a crazy number. That's one of the craziest Russell Westbrook stats of the season. That he took 16 mid-range shots in one game. Of all the Russell Westbrook stats, that is one of the craziest ones. Now, Billy has used the word unsustainable to describe that particular performance. But I don't know if Billy is necessarily trying to hone him in. Maybe that's the right move, honestly. Because maybe all the amazing, maybe his logic is just that, and he would never say this out loud, but maybe his logic is that he's gotten to a point where if you try to stifle some of the recklessness, you're going to stifle the amazing that the recklessness creates. And maybe he's gotten to that point. I'm not sure. That's why in some ways I think Russell is a tough guy to coach. Not because personality-wise he's uncoachable. I don't find that to be the case at all. He's just in some ways a little tougher to figure out. And that's, again, another thing that makes him as great as he is too. It's also what makes him, in my opinion, the most fascinating superstar in the league. Of all the superstars that we got in the NBA. With LeBron and with Kawhi Leonard and with Curry and with Durant and with Harden and everybody else, in my opinion, Russell Westbrook is the most fascinating character. And I think it's why he garners so much media attention. I think why when he and Harden are both having pretty comparable seasons, he's garnering a lot more media attention in a much smaller market. And I think part of the reason why is because he's such a fascinating guy, and this is one of those things. There's my perfect transition. Perfect transition, man. You know what? Hold on. I'm putting down the mic. Hold on one sec. Sorry, I had to give myself a round of applause. It was a perfect transition. Next question. Taylor Peterson. What can the Thunder do to slow down James Harden, who has been so hot recently? Also, who has the bigger night tomorrow, Russ or Harden? All right, so tomorrow night, let's talk about this. I am, just as a basketball fan, man, I am so excited for this game. This is going to be fun. If you're a Thunder fan, you shouldn't miss this game. There's really not a way that you should miss this game. This is going to be so fun. Look, the Rockets are really good. They're, in my opinion, they are the most fun team to watch in the league. They have a tremendous offense. They're third in points per possession right now. But offense around the league is up right now, and that includes at the top of the league. The Warriors are one, the Raptors are two, the Rockets are three. And the Rockets' points per possession total right now is actually higher than what the Warriors was last year when the Warriors led the league in points per possession. So this is like one of the highest points per possession totals we've seen in the league in a long time. It might be the highest we've seen. I wouldn't write this because I have to look it up, but I'll say it on the podcast because I think I can be more reckless on the podcast. I think it might be, these might be the three highest offensive ratings. Offensive rating is just points per possession. These might be the three highest offensive ratings that we've seen since the NBA-ABA merger in the mid-70s, which is crazy. We're seeing such good offense this year. Raptors have been great. Warriors have been great. And the Rockets are amazing, man. They're so good, that offense. And it's all around Harden, everything. They have other good players. It's not like he doesn't have help. Beverly's having a good year. They're playing really good defense since Beverly come back. People talk about them as all offense, no defense. They're playing really good defense since Patrick Beverly come back. They're actually middle of the pack in points allowed per possession right now, which they were not at the start of the year. That was pretty comfortably bottom 10. They might have even been close to bottom 5 in points allowed per possession. Now they're all of a sudden middle of the league. They've been a lot higher than that since the return of Patrick Beverly, who missed the first like 3 or so weeks of the season when he was hurt. But they got Beverly who can play. Ryan Anderson's having a good year. Eric Gordon might be sixth man of the year. That team could have MVP, coach of the year, and sixth man of the year. Because if they win 60, they're 27-9 right now. If they win 60, Mike D'Antoni's going to win coach of the year. Harden could easily win MVP, obviously. And Eric Gordon could win sixth man. He's been great. He's been awesome. He's shooting the lights out. If he's able to stay healthy, he's always been a good player. And you know what? As someone who I say it all the time, as someone who grew up a Clippers fan, I remember back in my Clippers fan days, I'm not a Clippers fan anymore. You just lose it when you cover the league. Like I find the Clippers one of the most interesting as an NBA fan. I find the Clippers one of the most interesting teams in the league. I mean, there's no emotion there. But back when there was, I remember being kind of upset when they traded for Chris Paul because Eric Gordon went away in that deal. And I was really excited about the Clippers under 22 lineup that they could throw out at the time, which was Eric Bledsoe at the 1, Eric Gordon at the 2, Al-Farouq Aminu at the 3, Blake Griffin at the 4, and DeAndre Jordan at the 5. And they were all under 22 years old at the time. And I was so excited about that. And I thought Gordon was going to be awesome. He was like 22 years old. He was averaging, he averaged like 22 a game that year, I think. He was shooting the lights out. He looked like he was going to be great. And then he was miserable in New Orleans. And the injuries came. And he had some injuries with the Clippers, but it didn't look like he was going to be this perennially injured guy. And it's cool to see that he's just been awesome this year. But everything still goes around Harden because Gordon is catch and shoot at this point. When he plays in that first unit lineup, he's catch and shoot. And everything goes around Harden. So what do the Thunder do about Harden? Let's actually get to Taylor Peterson's question. What can the Thunder do to slow him down? The Thunder have slowed him down. The Thunder have slowed him down better than any other team in the league has. So Harden on the season right now is 10-for-39 from the field against the Thunder. Wow. 10-for-39. Tip of the cap to Andre Roberson. He was 4-of-16 in that first meeting, 6-of-23 in the second. He had 6 turnovers that first time, 8 in the second. Roberson just does an amazing job guarding Harden one-on-one. Part of it is because Roberson is such a good scouting report defender. He's great at reading those scouting reports and really memorizing them and knowing players' tendencies. And it really helps him against guys like Harden, against guys like DeRozan, against guys like Chris Paul when he has to switch onto him, against Klay Thompson, who likes to be kind of crafty when he runs around screens and that kind of stuff. It really helps him on those guys who have those patented moves to try to get you to bite on stuff. And Harden, that's how he gets a lot of his fouls, how he gets to the line. And Roberson doesn't really bite. He reads them because he really learns them. He's a film buff. He knows the scouting reports. He's really good at that. And it's probably his best trait as a defender. It's probably his best. Now, he had an off night, I thought, against Charlotte. I didn't think he was great against Charlotte. One of his worst games of the year defensively. That's okay. They all have bad games. That's not going to be a trend. He's a fantastic defensive player. The Thunder have put him on an island against really good players this year. Harden, for sure. They've done it against other guys. They did it with Melo. Melo and Harden specifically are the two I can think of that they did it really most aggressively because those are two ball-dominant guys within an offense that Harden has basically guarded and matched up with the entire time intently. And the Thunder don't really shade over that much help. They don't try to switch at all on ball screens or anything like that. They just say, Andre, go get him. We're not going to come out of position to help you. If you don't get him, this guy's going to score. And he does a good job. He's done a great job on Harden. So I assume they're going to employ that similar strategy because it's worked well. Look, they've done a good job in kind of, this is a great offense, so they're going to score. But they've done a good job in kind of stifling the Houston offense. They beat them by 2 the first time they played, 105-103, when Houston barely scored. They went about 5.5 minute stretch without scoring in the fourth quarter. They were scoring well, but about 5.5 minute stretch without scoring in the fourth quarter. And that second game, they lost by 3, 102-99, in spite of Harden's really subpar game by his standards. But those are two of Harden's worst, absolutely worst games of the entire season. And they came against Andre Roberson. Maybe no coincidence. Probably no coincidence. So bigger game on Thursday? Look, we've seen Russ kill teams on second nights of back-to-backs. I don't think he gets tired. I think he's had a couple of subpar games. I think he's going to have the bigger line. Now, I don't think Harden is going to shoot 25% from the field again. I just don't think you can hold a guy like James Harden at 25% from the field in 3 straight games. Andre Roberson's great, and I think he'll do a good job, but I think Harden's going to have a big game himself. And no matter what these guys say, Russell Westbrook and James Harden, they're friends. They want to show each other up. That's the thing. People talk about how, like, the NBA now, everybody's friends, so they don't play hard against each other. I don't buy that at all. I think it's the opposite. When you go up against your friends, like, if you're competitive, when you go up against your friends, you want to kill them. You want to kill your friends when you go up against them in some kind of competition. Now, I wouldn't necessarily buy it if this were boxing, like, if you're bringing physical pain upon someone. But think about when, like, in anything, think about if you're, like, playing one-on-one tournament in the park. If you end up going up against your friends, it gets so competitive. You guys start talking crap. You're going so intense. All you want to do is beat them. When you go up against someone you don't know, you're not doing that in anything. Let's say you're just like playing video games and you're at somebody's house and you're friends with some people and you don't really know the other one. If you're playing against somebody who you're playing, you don't really know, you're not going to be talking smack to them. But if you do it against your friend, you want to beat them because they're just going to be giving you crap about it for however long they want. That's just the way competition works with friends. So I think they care. These are two remarkably competitive people. I think they care. I think they should care. I think it makes the NBA more fun if they do care. So I'm going to believe that they care. And I think they're both going to come up for this game. I think Harden's going to have a better game. I think they're both going to have great games. I think the Rockets are going to end up winning it because it's going to be the second night of a back-to-back. I think the Rockets are really, really, really good. They're really good. Second night of a back-to-back for the Thunder. It's in Houston. Houston won the last one that was in Oklahoma City. I think the Rockets are going to win that game. But in the actual head-to-head matchup, I think Harden's going to come away with that one. And I'm glad that nobody asked me who the MVP is right now because I honestly do not know. I really do not know the answer to that, and I'm glad that we have about 45 games left to decide. Remember, I'm on every day of the week, Monday through Friday, back on normal schedule now for the rest of time, Monday through Friday. Head on to iTunes, subscribe to Locked On Thunder there. Questions, comments, email lockedonthunder@gmail.com or find me on Twitter @FredKatz, FredKatz. Log on to normantranscript.com for all your Thunder needs and check out Thunder Road, my blog there, to follow team coverage and see what's next for the Thunder. That's going to do it for today. I will be back with you tomorrow from Houston, from my hotel room after the game. Until next time, though, after that Houston game, Locked On Thunder is locking up.
Progressive presents Mindflowness with Flo.
Before you lies a beautiful meadow. In that meadow, Progressive Direct has placed its auto insurance rates alongside those of competitors. You select the lowest rate and feel a great sense of calm. A great sense of...
Compare Progressive Direct rates with competitors' rates so you can rest easy. Visit Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.